we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We were just laughing, as you just heard, because we have repeating guest Sally Lemos on. I'm clapping. Yay. We're both clapping because before we even started, we started how much later than we? An hour and a half later.
Yeah.
Than we originally intended to, because we were just having such a deep, wonderful conversation, healing and helpful. So I know that even if people don't tune in, which I know they will, this has been blessed for me. So we love you. Thank you for coming back on. Now there's cameras. Now people get to finally see how beautiful and how kind and how sweet your presence is. They got to hear it last time, and now they get to see it. But we wanted to jump on today and welcome you back. And if you, we'll link the last episode that you were on. It was a while ago now, right?
It was too long ago.
I think I did Christmas with you guys last year. It's kind of interesting. Because it's Christmas again.
Yeah, you did Christmas. You and Greta, I think, are both in the same space of like just being, I think you both win the award of being on the most.
I think Sally might win it at this point.
I think you win, yeah.
So Greta, that's enough. We need to link past episodes. But for those that haven't listened, Sally is a dear friend. I feel like it's a long history of relationship, but Sally is a therapist. Sally, you are just so greatly gifted by God. I feel like I just told my brother this the other day, who had done EMDR for the first time. And I said, doing EMDR in your office with you has been to date the like deepest experiences I've had with Jesus. And you sitting there listening to the Holy Spirit, praying while using all of the modalities you are educated in, but bringing your own lived experience of walking with Jesus is just such a gift to anybody who's in your presence. And so I just, any chance we can get you to just share yourself and who God has made you to be and what he's gifted you in with those listening, just feels like I get to share one of my favorite things. Like all those podcasts that do their like Christmas favorite things.
This episodes. Is one of ours.
Sally's one of my favorite things.
Also, we're going to let you talk because this episode's... We're interviewing you, but we also have to mention sweet Ernie, your husband, Ernie. We love Ernie so much. I was walking with Diane the other day and he drives up, you know, close with his Subaru. And I was like, And I just forgot that that was his car. Like, I just didn't connect. I was like, who is that? And he rolls down the window and his big smile. And just so funny. He's just so, he's the most neighborly human.
Yes, he is.
He's like every neighbor you want.
Kindest man in the world. He knows really everyone. Yeah. I'm a little reclusive. I don't know anyone. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm Ernie's wife. They're like, oh, you're Ernie's wife. So he's my claim to fame.
Ernie's wife. Yeah. He, and it was so cool is you live on the same street as Phil and Diane, which means you live, you know, a little more than a block from us.
I know.
It's all really beautiful. We're very thankful.
Only God could do that.
I know. We didn't even know that you were moving into the neighborhood. I remember that story.
I think you were in my office saying your parents were moving to be closer to help. And I'm like, oh, that's fun. Where are they moving? And you said Patrols. And I'm like, oh, that's fun. What street? And I'm like, oh, we're going to have a conversation, I think, about that because we live on that street.
Oh, my gosh.
So funny. Well, we're having a lot of laughter now at the beginning because what we want us to talk about today is generational trauma. So
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. It's by the time this airs, it'll be past Christmas, but Happy New Year. Something to start your new year with. So we wanted to, you know, Elizabeth and I have been thinking about this. I know Diane, we were talking with Diane as well. And just processing so much of what is generational trauma. What does the Bible say? How do we interact with it? What's real versus what's just like a lot of hype around this idea? Because I think there's a lot of confusion around, well, what does play out as generational trauma? So we really just want to give you the floor primarily today. But I know that we had talked about even before starting, there's obviously biblical basis for some of this for sure. We know that too. But I also think even the biblical basis is a little confusing. Those verses like, you know, these things will be handed down to the third and fourth generation. What does that even mean? What are those things? So we would love to start the combo and take this wherever you want. We'll follow your lead to an extent, but like, what is generational trauma? So maybe let's start with that. And please feel free to add scripture, add any, maybe just educate a little bit as we get into what this is and how it plays out.
So I think for me, the place I kind of need to start, and it where it kind of started to make sense for me, is really I start with Exodus 20.
Yeah.
Because that's where God talks about, you know, that the inequities of a father will be passed down. Yes. And when I first read that as a brand new believer with three kids, it totally freaked me out. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I know my stuff. I don't want to pass my stuff on. What does that mean? And so over the course of 30-some years that I've been walking with the Lord, now in the clinical world, I begin to make sense of, it's not that God is saying, and I'm not a theologian, I'm staying in my lane. It's not to me that God is saying, I'm going to punish you. Mm. I think it's kind of like, this is how the world works. This is how I created it. Mm-hmm. Gravity works. Mm-hmm. This is how this works.
Yes.
And if there are places that there's idols, and it can be a coping mechanism or that something is in the place where God is supposed to be, it's going to cause this ripple in our lives. Yeah. And I think where we're talking about generational trauma, trauma is a significant anything our system is over, it's overwhelming to our system. From a clinical standpoint, when we think of trauma, it's abuse and neglect. So if people are listening and they've got littles around.
Oh, yes. I never said that. Let me say that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let me say this so you
all of a sudden I'm getting in this like, ooh.
Sorry, I never said that. Yes, for this episode, just a quick disclaimer. We are going to be talking about mature topics. So if you are one that's listening in the car or you're watching this on YouTube in the home, just know we are going to be talking and covering some adult level maturity topics and might not be best for little ears. That said, Sally, you have the floor. Now you can say whatever you want.
Now earbuds are in.
Yeah, yeah. So I think for me, kind of being able to divine what that trauma is, in the mid-1990s, there was a significant, robust study done called the ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences. So we have these 10 questions, kind of these 10 markers, and I'm not going to go through all 10, but it's easily found on the internet, where just these 10 questions, and the questions are kind of asking things that happened to you in your home that are abusive or neglectful, or something that happened, was happening around you. So if there was a mental health issue with a parent, those things are on that as well. So thinking about the trauma, did the trauma actually happen to me, or did I have a parent that experienced trauma? And so because of their nervous system and the way their nervous system responded to trauma, my nervous system picks that up. So it's very unspoken. It's not this, I said something, I did something. It's the result of trauma and how it affects our nervous system.
Well, I'm just connecting lots of dots personally right now, but I'll save those for later. But yes, that not only makes so much sense, but is like, yeah, because you don't have to actually experience the trauma to experience the side effects of it.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. So we think of, I mean, the word epigenetics. So genetics are, this is how I look. These are, it's my DNA, the color of my eyes, how tall I am, all of those things. Mm-hmm. We also, the concept of epigenetics. So things that turn things on or turn things off in our genes, being in a very robust, loving home, being able to explore and learn things and have loving relationships, turns on all these lovely things in us. Mm. Being in a home where there's fear or there's chaos or there's results of trauma because one of our parents have experienced trauma and maybe have an addiction or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. That trauma didn't happen to me, but my body will pick up what's going on in my parents' body. And because we regulate one with another. Mm. So it's, and we've talked about this before, but just because other people probably haven't heard it. There's places now that you can actually look at videos of heartbeats.
Yes.
Of people together. And we start out and they're all kind of they're different. And then as time goes on, they all begin to beat together.
Really?
Yeah. It is.
We have talked about this before, but that's fascinating, always still
fascinating to watch. So, and that's why, I mean, you guys hear me with this all the time with our kids, and I have to do the same thing, and it's an effort. But when things start to get pitched, escalate, if one person can stay somewhat regulated, eventually over time, and it takes time, other people will kind of match that lower. And a lot of times words don't even need to be spoken. It's just, I'm right here, which I'm sure knowing something about your family, that happens probably a lot. But that's a piece of what happens when we're in relationships. There's another part of like, and I'm going to use my own example.
Sure.
In my family, I came into a system that was lovely and loving and all of those wonderful things if you looked at it from the outside, but there were unknown things on the inside, secrets and things, and an extended family member was a perpetrator. I was not the only one. I think I'm the only one in my generation, but in generations before, that was sexually abused. And so that piece kind of got handed down that didn't necessarily with that context end up with my children, but my children were raised with a parent who had been traumatized.
Yeah. Wow.
So for me, I was a late bloomer, kind of a radical conversion in my early 30s, three littles and Jesus saved me. But I was in a really, really dark place having had that kind of trauma in my life. Yeah. So kind of coming out of that, my own context is my children were obviously affected by a parent who had experienced trauma. Mm-hmm. So they now have their own stories unfolding. My hope and my prayer is that as I've continued to do my work over the last 30 years, things have changed so that the doors are open for my children to deal with their trauma. And we are breaking the generational cycle of trauma in our life. And I say that in a way to normalize the reality of the fallen world that we live in.
Mm.
One in 10 will be sexually abused before 18 is the statistics that we... And that's not in or out of the church. That's humanity in general. So I know that there are people probably that are going, oh, that's me hearing this. And it may be somebody who has never really even spoke of that. So I just want to, with tenderness and sensitivity, just say, you're not alone.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Yeah. Well, you even mentioned being in your 30s and... finding Jesus, having three kids, you had all three at that time.
Mm-hmm.
To me, although I didn't have to live it, just knowing those couple of details, those markers, that brings me hope personally to see where you're at today. Mm-hmm. And anyone listening that's in their 30s and has experienced trauma and is just like, what the heck is going on? I know that stuff's going on and it's coming out in my kids and it's coming out all over my kids, like I, or my spouse. I think it just gives someone like myself hope to know that there is a lot of energy that, and through the Spirit, which I love, that we share the conviction of these things do not just happen in a psychological understanding, but in the power of the Holy Spirit in and through you. Mm-hmm. But partnering with the Spirit to do this deep work, to see who you are and the presence you bring. I mean, you walked into the studio today and I just started opening up about all this stuff I wasn't even planning on talking to you about because you're actually a safe space and you've actually embodied this. So I just wanted to highlight that for anybody, that those markers are important because that's where a lot of people that are listening are at. They're in that yeah. stage. And I think your life is even an example of, hey, it's not been easy. You've done so much work, but it's totally possible. Yeah. And healing is, you know, it looks maybe different than we always assume, but healing is very possible.
Yeah. And I think Elizabeth and I were just praying and thinking that, you know, we're kind of setting the stage for this is what generational trauma is. And I think I sent you some things that if you want to put in the show notes that people can
yes,
that are easy
did.
To,
yeah,
sure
yeah,
to digest
mm-hmm.
To kind of make sense of it. But I think the bigger piece today in talking is like, here's what it is, but God.
Mm. Yeah.
Just over and over and over again. But God, and I think my story is just filled with all of these places, but God. And yeah. that's the reality, I think, for all of us, if we're willing to lean into it. It can be really kind of daunting, and I think this is kind of what we were talking a little bit about, Brooke, that it's like you kind of start waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an amazing mentor of 30 plus years that she used to call it as I was waking up and she was walking alongside me, waking up from the nightmare of the lie. And it's just like all of a sudden the light's so bright you can hardly see. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I was sexually abused.
Mm.
Like nobody ever really said those words, but like, what the heck?
Yeah.
It's just wow. so kind of daunting
yeah.
and shocking in those moments
yeah.
that even labeling, but it's just, it is such a very slow, gradual process as we walk with the Lord through those moments.
I'd be curious, and I'm sure you have so many questions. So on this idea of, you know, give me an idea of what qualifies as trauma and why you kind of did a little bit, but I think that's important because you had even said, you know, for your experience, and by the way, thank you for just being open and honest about your own story and vulnerable about that, that it's not only brave, but beautiful. And mm-hmm. I think also healing when we realize like so many of us have gone through so many hard things. So I want to say thank you for that. Also though, I think another question is you're saying that your trauma, which was, you know, direct trauma for you, but mm-hmm. your kids still experienced it because of the dysregulation, the things that were going on in your own life and nervous mm-hmm. system. So yeah, what qualifies as trauma? And then maybe kind of how does that play out? Because I could easily say to myself, well, I don't have trauma, right? But then the more I uncover my own life and story, I'm like, oh no, that's not true at all, right?
Yeah.
So maybe just help us with that.
So I think anything that happens to us that's overwhelming to our nervous system. So when okay. we think about childhood trauma, a parent or a person that is in a caregiving role that is supposed to be a safe place, for that person to be a person that is actually harming you would be considered trauma. So okay. verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, those are the types of things that are considered like big T trauma, would be more mm-hmm. like a PTSD diagnosis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Living with a parent who is maybe an alcoholic, because they've had trauma, if that parent is harming you, definitely big T trauma. If it's a functional, so there's layers.
Sure, yeah. sure.
Does that kind of help
yeah.
a little bit?
Yeah.
yeah.
What about like events, like really traumatic events or illnesses or like how does that get? Because I know there's stuff around like.
We're asking for a friend.
Things
not us.
Become trauma when you didn't have support.
Right.
To help get through it.
Yeah.
But like, how does that play into, cause I'm thinking of our own story for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm mm-hmm. thinking of people listening who are like, okay, well I didn't actually have wasn't harmed by a parent, but like my brother died or yeah. my brother went through cancer, like whatever it is in a family.
And that's big T trauma.
Yeah.
Because it involves death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So life-threatening. Mm-hmm. Experiencing firsthand or being with somebody who has experienced firsthand.
Yeah.
Something that was a life-threatening kind of event.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And when we think of small T trauma, that's like anything that's overwhelming to our nervous system. Okay. That's too much for me to take
okay.
without somebody being with me. And that's where kind of the secondary trauma type of things you wouldn't necessarily, and I'm speaking in diagnoses
sure. yeah.
if this is helpful, but that wouldn't necessarily be like a PTSD mm-hmm. kind of a thing because you wouldn't have intrusive memories or you wouldn't have like flashbacks of an event,
mm-hmm.
but you would be feeling it
sure.
from someone else's body who had experienced that. Does yeah. that
oh, yeah.
help?
Oh, yeah. As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
I'm thinking maybe tell me if this is a proper example, but I'll just use our own story. Like, I have very distinct memories from when Birdie got diagnosed and being in the hospital. I cry talking about it. I can go right back there. I can smell everything. I can feel it in my body. Like, and it comes up at random times, certain doctor's offices, certain smells. And I would say that our daughter, Scarlett, doesn't remember any, couldn't articulate any of that to you, but has experienced, she has reactions to certain ways that I would feel or certain things that happen in our house or that she would never pinpoint directly to what happened. But I can see, like yes. zooming out,
yes,
some of it is the secondary trauma, the small T trauma from having lived that experience right next to Brooke and I as we're Absolutely. Experiencing all of it. I mean, she lived it too. It was her sister. But she was 4 when it happened.
But those things, and I think the thing that we need to kind of keep in mind too is that it's recorded in our nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, you have explicit memories
yeah.
of what happened.
Yeah.
And you can place the smells in the room and those things. There's also implicit memories where we don't have the ability cognitively to record that information where we can remember it, or it was so traumatizing that cognitively, we weren't able to be available to take in the information, yes. but it's still in our body.
Yeah.
So walking into a room
yeah.
that, I mean, even if Scarlett was little and she had been there, that had certain distinctive characteristics that her nervous system picked up, she could potentially feel that in her body and go like, what's happening to me right now?
Yeah.
There's a story that comes to mind. And again, I've already said that you need to have earbuds in and you already need to like make sure your kids aren't listening probably because this will be out of context. But there's a story that I had talked to a friend about. And the reason I'm saying this story is actually because I think it is so exactly, I'm putting all these pieces together. Like this is exactly what this person talked about and they didn't even know it. So as the story goes, obviously anonymity, but this now man, he was abused as a kid, mm-hmm. Sexually abused as a kid, mm-hmm. Specifically by a priest and the whole situation, mm-hmm. the stuff that we hear of just terror and just nightmares. And he had, as an adult man, had like no awareness, recollection, or would even have told you like, yeah, this happened. But it was like, it was a very involved, and it wasn't just molestation. It was basically rape, which is a very insane thing. And he had no recollection, and he was about 40, and he decided to start working out. So he's going to the gym. He gets a trainer, and the trainer and him are doing this like specific squatting movement, and he's supporting him. All of a sudden, something happened within his body that just reminded of some sort of situation from, obviously you can fill in the dots of this trauma he'd experienced. He started throwing up violently, and he started remembering all these things almost like a flood, like a door was open, and it was like he saw his whole life. And he thought for a while that it wasn't even real. He's like, what is going on? Like, originally, he just thought he was sick, and then he went back, and basically it took months and months and months to realize, like, that wasn't just a thought. That actually had happened to me. So, again, I know it's an intense story, but my hope with sharing it is to just connect, like, this particular person had no recollection, blocked it off completely.
Yes.
And as I'm imagining, like, a way to survive.
Yes, absolutely.
As a way to survive. And so then all of a sudden, he's having to deal with this whole world and be honest about stuff that he's never even had to think about. Yeah. But to his recollection, to that point, he had never had any, you know, remembrance or awareness.
It's amazing how God creates us to be able to adapt and survive in situations.
Yeah.
It is phenomenal. I mean, that makes so much sense that he would have a part that kept him safe from ever acknowledging it, but also would make sense that at some point
it needs to just be,
God would allow it to come out. In my situation, it was like there were subtleties about the circumstances in my family that it was kind of like nobody, is everybody like, I'm kind of, everybody's sort of, you all kind of see what's going on here, right? Like there's somebody here in the room and there's somebody walking by and the door is open and you see this happen and you see that happen. And, but it was kind of like just, I don't even remember when it started that it was just so
normal.
Part of it. Yeah.
Wow.
That then there was a point in my life that it was like all of a sudden the light went off and I went, oh my gosh.
Wow. Wow. So similarly to you, there was
sexually abused.
Wow.
And then, I mean, the circumstances just kind of started playing out. And that realization just, you know, for me was like my early 20s.
Wow.
And, you know, I have lots of parts of me that did lots of different things to help me make sense of what I was living with and survive. And you would never have known it. I mean, you would have thought, oh, she's got it all figured out. And, you know, I was successful at the things I was doing, and but certainly had lots of things going on underneath.
Well, I hope to like to stick on this, you know, topic of generational trauma. So let's talk about some of that understanding, because right, you were saying that some of these things get turned on, activated. I'd love to understand more of like, what does that mean? Like, so for example, you've experienced this trauma firsthand, right? But then what does that mean for your kids? Does that mean your great, great grandkids are going to suffer from this? Like, I guess, you know, even from the scriptural context, like I want to talk about that and understand that better.
Yeah. So I think knowing what we know now, that this is a phenomenon that happens, and that thank you so much for doing what you guys do, that we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That this is something real, and this is something that we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, so clearly, but God. Over and over in my own life, over and over and over in the lives of people that I have the privilege of walking alongside. And I think it's kind of, for everyone, the process is a little bit different, how we kind of become awake and start processing those things. But I think denial is a piece that kind of keeps us functioning at some point, and then there's a place. And it's interesting because I feel like, and this is just anecdotally in my own work, like kind of early 30s is kind of where things start to percolate for some reason.
It's really true.
And so I kind of feel like, I mean, in my own life, my desire was I just wanted to be a mom. I wanted to get married. I wanted to have a home. I wanted this little Norman Rockwell thing. And I had three kids and I had all the things that I thought I wanted, but what was kind of going on? And there were lots of complex things going on in my marriage with my children's father. Mm-hmm. Also at the time that it was just kind of like, and then having kids. Mm. I mean, I think that's the sandpaper in so many ways. I mean, yes. I could see myself in my kids.
Yeah. Yes.
And actually, yeah. the way I came to know the Lord, my parents took us to church on and off. And there was just something about like having kids, you need to take your kids to church. So we started going to church here in Bend. And Bible preaching, church, I mean, Spirit was present. Sure. I'm just like, everybody believes all this and look at their faces. I mean, I could see the glory of God in these people's faces. I'm pregnant with my third, who was a bonus baby, not really wanting to be pregnant. We had a business that was so demanding and nannies and travel and lots of things that made it so complicated. I was a whoopsie baby. My nickname was Boo Boo. And
no way.
Yeah.
That's trauma there, right there.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, I could,
we laugh
at some
now,
point, yeah. I will tell you the whole story. Yeah. It's yeah. so convoluted. It's just sure. kind of crazy. Like, you can't make this up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But wow. there was a part of me that I was never going to have three children because I was never going to have a middle child. Mm. I was never going to do what had been done to me, these parts of that I was awakened to. And here I was with this little girl. And in the middle of the night, holding her, she looked so much like me.
Yeah, she still does to this day.
I bumped
into her. We bumped into her at church a couple weeks ago. I didn't know she was in town, and I was like, "What are you doing here?" And she looks just like you.
Just like you.
So much like you.
But I just thought, I love you so much.
Yeah.
I just, and God just was like, and I made you just like I made her. Mm. Psalm 139, I knit you together in your mother's womb. Mm-hmm. I had a plan and a purpose for you. You mm-hmm. are not a mistake.
Yeah.
There is no way a human being could ever know that was mm-hmm. the deepest place of wounding for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And put my story together in a way that's where he made himself known in my life. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. Mm. I think he just... The things that are awakening in you, mm-hmm. it's awful. Mm-hmm. It's just awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's right there.
Yeah.
Letting you know I was right there when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm right here right now to redeem it with you, to show you that I have everything you need to make it better.
Yeah.
So I think in that process, of the kind of the denial and then the kind of waking up, we can sling to the other side of blaming. Mm. And I think there's a lot of that going on kind of in our culture right now. We're cancel this and cancel that.
We literally did an episode yesterday on this exact topic on just writing off families.
Canceling hard people.
Canceling hard people.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're just hard. So I'm going to.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the piece about blaming that I think we kind of need to see how the teeter-totter works. If I'm in a position that I am blaming somebody, I'm also in a position of being a victim.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so how do you, because we have talked a lot in the past, naming is so important, being able to honestly name what happened to you. But how do we name and not blame? Because I feel like sometimes there's a fine line there of being able to be honest and name it without saying, it's all my parents' fault or it's all, you know. Walk us through that. How do you do that?
It feels like a teeter-totter to me.
Yeah.
So like denial's on one side and blame's on the other side and naming's in the middle.
Mm.
And we're going to teeter-totter.
Yeah.
As we're doing the naming thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth, I think of anyone in my life that has taught me and lived lament, the naming is lament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It hurts so bad.
Yeah,
it does.
I mean, there are places that it just hurt so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's that grieving and letting go.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't even know, I can't remember, I know it's in a journal somewhere, having a conversation with my son at one point because we weren't able to be in relationship with my parents at that time. I was holding on so tight to trying to make it work that at some point God just said I had to let it go.
Mm.
There were places that I had to set some boundaries. And what he was showing me was as I let it go, he was bringing people into my life. And this woman who began as a mentor, and now I call her my mama, who I chose, and she has been a surrogate grandparent to my children and now a great-grandmother to my grandchildren. My Blake said to me, Mom, oh, that's kind of like Grandma Judy and Grandpa Ernie. Like, you're kind of letting go, and God gave us Grandma Judy and Grandpa Ernie. And it's like, uh-huh.
Wait, Ernie wow. is your mentor's husband's yeah. name?
So you want to know a funny story?
Yeah, this is a good story. I know where she's going to go.
I didn't know that.
At one point in my singleness,
okay.
I was so sassy. I have a very sassy part. I really like this part of me. I was doing all the stuff at my house, and okay. I needed an extension ladder.
Okay.
So I called Judy, and she's like, sure, we have an extension ladder. Her Ernie put her in his truck. He's an engineer. Taped, you know, strapped it all down. It's all okay. Here she comes in the truck, and she pulls up, and I'm like, if I ever get married again, it will be to a Mr. Ernie Jr.
You're joking.
I am not
and if
joking.
Anybody knows your Ernie, that's he can do all that plus.
Yep. Yep.
Is that the funniest that thing?
So I literally said to him the other day, he wanted to go buy an extension ladder to hang
Sweetheart,
our Christmas lights. And I said, you should call Ernie.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said, I bet you he has one.
No, but here's the deal.
He wanted to own one.
You were being cheap. Let's be honest.
I was being cheap.
She was being cheap. And this has been one of those things where I was like, it's a ladder. Once you have it, you basically have it forever.
Yep. Yeah.
And we have these second story windows that are always driving her crazy. Me too, that you can't clean the outside of them because mm-hmm. you don't have a ladder big enough. I was like, this is $120. I don't want to spend it either. But for us to have it, I don't have to borrow a ladder every time I put up and take down Christmas lights. I was like, this is great. And so she's like, call Ernie. I was like, I would, but it's not about Ernie. I know. I bet you he has the best ladder. I want to go out to my garage and be like, that's mine.
Anyway, there's your ladder.
But yeah. Anyway, yes. So Mr. Ernie Jr.
Yeah.
You married him.
I did.
Is it's that, so fun.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I think these are all the places only God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I think about, and I mean, with where, like when my life kind of unraveled and where I was with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And where we are now and where I am now. I mean, we have messy stuff. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that, but I just think, oh my word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just so, so grateful. I think Psalm 126 says, talks about when we sow in tears, it's mm-hmm. the reaping, but we're sowing in tears. Mm-hmm. That is the lamenting piece.
Yeah.
And, there was a season, so for me, coming out of my trauma, alcoholism and an eating disorder were part of my,
wow,
how I made sense of it or how mm-hmm. I coped.
Yeah.
The alcohol, after I got saved, oh my gosh, what is the passage? Confess your sins one to another and you will be healed.
James.
Yeah, yeah. I had a little flip calendar. I mean, I'm maybe barely a year old in the Lord and I flipped and that was there. I called my husband at the time and confessed and we got rid of everything. And really what I know now clinically with the amount of alcohol I was consuming at that time, I should have probably died by quitting cold turkey. It's not, you don't want to quit
really?
Cold turkey.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's, you need to detox.
How long was
rate.
That season? Like-
I started drinking, well, the interesting piece is in our family, alcohol was not something that was sort of taboo. I mean, I can remember Christmas mornings being given a little juice glass of a gin fizz that had gin in it.
Okay.
I can remember being in high school and having an old soda pop machine from my dad's office that was full of beer, and we could have mm-hmm. beer pretty much at our, as long as we didn't drive. And again, we need to kind of context. So
yeah.
I'm 64. So that was long before Mothers Against Drunk Drivers and all of those movements. Mm-hmm. The other piece that I feel like context around sexual abuse, the first law protecting children was in 1974.
Really? It was that late?
I was 14. My abuse ended when I was 12. So when we think about generational trauma, I mean, like now we have all of these things that are in place to protect children, but for a long time there wasn't anything.
Yeah.
And so learning how to survive was part of denial and a whole other mm-hmm. level of coping.
Of yeah. course.
So I want to offer that as if somebody is naming, if there's a generational piece, if someone is naming, you know, why did somebody not protect me? And I certainly experienced a season of grief and anger around that I had to go through. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to keep it in context and make sure that we're all doing the best we can. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, I've hurt my kids. I cannot hold my young mom parts responsible for all the things I know now as I look back. And I do look back and I do have parts that really ache for what I wasn't able to give my kids in the moment. Mm-hmm. The beauty in knowing what I know now, though, is I have 5 grandbabies. Mm-hmm. And the way I love them is different than the way I loved my kids. Mm-hmm. But I'm loving my kids as I'm loving my grandkids.
Yes.
Could you tell with all the appropriate context, but the story you shared with us just about the young
Ellie,
just about her, you know, she's little kids. I mean, I know ours too. They fear is just a normal part of being little for sure. Yeah. But maybe if you don't mind, that little story I think it's just mm-hmm. a good practical example of what this even looks like. Maybe practically, to give our kids something, not only that we we weren't even able to give them in your situation, right? Like you're giving this to your grandkids, but to even give us an example of what this might look like as parents.
Yeah. So I think we talked a little bit about, it's hard to give something away that we haven't been given. So as I'm healing, it's not like I'm learning all of these things. It is, I'm learning things and I'm doing something different. But healing is a state change where I once never felt safe in my body. Mm. Every environment felt threatening to me. Mm-hmm. It's learning to feel safe in my body because the trauma is being dealt with. And so I feel differently in my body. Mm-hmm. And then my body feels different to other people. My nervous system is relaxed. Mm-hmm. And so when people are with me, they can feel that rather than feeling this tension of I'm kind of lit up a little bit. Like,
yeah,
I'm
kind of looking around. Yeah, hence why we had an hour therapy session before we started.
The minute you walked in.
the unspecified,
So I think, I mean, in honesty, the scripture we started with was like, I was so aware I did not want to pass things on that mm-hmm. there was a part of me that parented in fear and control.
Sure, mm-hmm. yep.
So things were super tight, super restrictive, super, you give me chapter and verse and I'll go along with whatever it is you want to say, not, of course you want to do that. You know, mm-hmm. so that was a piece that they grew up feeling probably very controlled. Mm-hmm. I think they know that I love them, but that didn't probably feel very loving.
Sure.
My healing keeps going on.
Okay.
My kids have left home. My nervous system is different now. Mm. My little Ellie, who's almost 3, is spending the night, and she's got some things going on in her life that are kind of scary to her right now.
Yeah.
She hears my husband come in the back door, and the door closes, and she's just lit.
Yeah.
I'm scared. And I just, you know, kind of pulled her close to me and put my hand on her chest, and you could just feel her heart thumping. Mm. And I'm like, oh, I can feel it. Your body's telling you you're scared. And she's just, I'm scared.
Yeah.
You heard a sound. You heard the door. I heard the, who's in the, who, do you hear who it is? It's Papa.
Yeah.
I hear Papa. It's Papa. Yeah. And then she's slowing down. She's like, I hug. So I just hugged her and her system. And I'm like, you're safe. Mm. I didn't know how to do that with my kids, but I know how to do that with Ellie, with my grandkids. Mm-hmm. And later, at some point, she'd heard something. She looked at me and grabbed my hand and she said, Jaja, I'm safe. I see you. You're safe.
Wow.
You're right. You're safe.
That's beautiful.
I think that, back to what you were saying about the but God part, and that this is a framework that we have to have, understanding generational trauma. We have to talk about it. We can't ignore it as believers, although it would be nice to be like, oh, but we can ignore that because of all these truths we know. I think about like the story of the Bible is exactly what you're talking about, is we get this little glimpse into this beautiful, perfect world we were created for. Mm. And the rest of the story is revealing everything that is broken and God's continuous redemption after redemption after redemption. Yes. Him saying, this is a mess. Yes. This is a mess you created and the enemy created, but I'm with you. I'm right here with you. And it's God constantly redeeming. And we know the ultimate redemption coming someday. But the whole story of the scripture is right now, present redemption over and over again in people's real life stories. Yes. When you read the gospel, that's what it is. People's insane brokenness and but God, but in the gospels, but Jesus stepping right in and healing, whether it's instantaneous physical healing or radically changing their lives. And I think as believers, we have to be able to hold the realities of our stories, of the generational trauma, the generational sin, the things that have hurt us. I'm thinking of like, man, all the people living with, they didn't experience the trauma, but their parents did. Yes. Like that's psychologically hard to recognize, to unpack how that affected you over time. I mean, that's a lot of my story of my mom later in life, understanding the trauma that she came from and how she brought that into parenting. And just like you, it stopped with her, but it doesn't mean it didn't affect us, you know, and we're now unpacking the ways that it did. And so I think we have to have this ability to name it with God without blaming. That, like, I love that visual you gave of the teeter-totter and that naming's in the middle. But to also keep in mind, but we have a God of redemption who is constantly redeeming, constantly healing. It's both.
Yeah.
And I think that's really hopeful and it's honest.
Yeah.
Because if you live only just in the hope of it's okay because I have God, you're not actually naming anything or actually stopping patterns. You're just reframing it and trying
to. But you're also not experiencing what Jesus wants to give us.
Yes. Mm.
And that's the I'm right here.
Yeah. Mm.
Dan Siegel's work around neurobiology, the needing to be seen and soothed and safe and secure is something that Kurt Thompson also incorporates. And through these confessional communities and his most recent book, The Deepest Place, it's in that deepest place where we're really able to name it and go that we experience Jesus. Mm. It's the suffering that brings the transformation, but I don't get the gift of being with Jesus, the being seen and soothed and safe and secure if I don't name it and I don't go there. Mm. God gave me a picture about a year ago, kind of like we arrive and we're trying to figure out who we are, looking in the faces of the people around us. So it's descriptive of the mirror neuron that happens. So if I'm looking in the eyes of someone who has been traumatized, the way I see the reflection of who I am is kind of convoluted. And so the illustration of the picture that he gave me was like going to a carnival and trying to see myself in one of those wavy mirrors. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, who the heck am I? Mm-hmm. And really for all of us, even the good enough parenting, like the 60% of the time I can attune and repair and do those things, that's still a convoluted mirror. That's not who I was created to be, because my parents didn't create me.
Yeah.
But God did. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm adopted into his family, I have this perfect mirror that I can look into to really see who I was created to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which mirror sometimes are we looking in? And then who are the people that I'm with that Jesus is living in that can be with me, not fix me?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes not even words, but just be with me.
Yeah.
To experience the embodiment of Jesus with me, that's the state change. Feeling seen and soothed and safe and secure. Not the head knowledge, but the embodiment. That's the piece of naming that really brings the transformation, at least in my experience.
Well, I think it is your experience, though, to be fair, is probably what most people's experiences is of the naming piece is so essential. But as you're talking about all this, I'm just thinking of the person that's listening and like, Sally, I love this. I fit in this category of somebody who's either experienced trauma or had a dysregulated, a parent that was abused and had different big T trauma that's been in one way or another passed down. I want to name stuff, but what does that look like? So help us understand the process. Like, what does this process look like of healing? Because
how does somebody start on that journey?
Yeah, that's a better way to say it. Yeah, how does somebody start on that journey? Because so much of what you're saying, I'm just, and because I'm in this work personally, like there's so much of me that's like, yes, and I already have a lot of framework because of the last 10 years of my life. That said, though, there's some listening that have no framework to this. Yeah. Like, Sally, that's great naming. What the heck does naming mean, yeah. right? So maybe just even for those that might be in the beginning stages, what would you just say to some that are listening that are like, I fell in this category of being abused or experiencing that. I'm supposed to name stuff. What does that even mean? What does that look like? So maybe just on a practical level, would you help with that?
So I think a couple things come up just hearing you say that. It's like, what's happening? I mean, if somebody's really struggling with depression or anxiety or, you know, having a hard time, you know, managing parenting or feeling angry or overwhelmed or whatever, you know, I would encourage people to try to find a therapist that they could work with that could really be with them and help them unpack it. Because I think we need to be really mindful in titrating how we unpack it. Mm-hmm. We can't just like take it all in at once. Mm-hmm. It's just little pieces at a time and creating safety as we're doing that where our bodies can hold space for that. Internal family systems is a modality that is newer for me. I'm certified in EMDR, and in the last like 3 or 4 years, I've done quite a bit of training in IFS and my own work in internal family system, and it's been amazing. The thing I love so much about internal family systems is Dick Schwartz, who developed it, was courageous enough to be with people that were really struggling with things like eating disorders and suicidality and those things, and kind of be curious, like the part of you that wants to cut, the part of you that wants to hurt yourself or kill yourself, or what is that part trying to do? Where you can really kind of like get to know that part and what that part's trying to protect. He discovered that in everyone there's this place of knowing that he calls the self. That's Imago Dei. We are all created in the image of God. Every human being has Imago Dei. And then for us, we have the spirit that lives inside of us. So I feel like that's a piece that can bring lots of healing for us. That's kind of available. Dr. Allison Cook took internal family systems and brought it together in a book called Boundaries for Your Soul.
Jenna, she called it the spirit-led self, which I feel like really resonates.
Yes. Yeah. And Jana Reimersma, also they wrote their books fairly close to the same time, All Together You. It kind of brings this, how do I make sense of some of these parts of me that do these things that I really don't want to do? Sort of that Romans 7 thing. So I think that would be a place to start to being in a community and in relationships that are safe, not where somebody's trying to fix you or give you scriptures. I think we do that intending well, but we can be spiritually bypassing that can be kind of damaging for people.
Oh, yes.
But
big time.
Being in community where there are people that can just be with you as you're kind of unpacking those things can be helpful
that's
too.
So good. So good. Yeah. And I think even just starting with the books that we'll have those in the show notes, just even.
And I've read them both. They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's another person.
Profoundly helpful to me.
Yeah. Hit us
just,
with it.
Sorry. No. She actually lives here. Her name is Molly LaCroix.
Okay.
She's written 2 books, taking IFS and linking it with the scriptures. I'm losing the names. One's Journey to Shalom, and there's another one that's more about relationships in the church. But those are both great, great
amazing
books too. Yeah.
Now, our time is unfortunately done for today, but I think as we're having this conversation, I don't know about you two, but it feels like we just opened the door. We cracked the door. So you're coming back on if you can. If you can make it a sliver, we do a part 2 of this? We'd love to. And we're going to intentionally, like, we'll release this episode. If you're hearing this, just know in the next few weeks or months, you'll hear part 2. And we'll capture the second one because I think there's still so many places that we really do, I think we not only need to know, but uncover and understand because this topic is so vast. And I think that we're just really at the tip of the iceberg of all the different elements and things that we can know and understand. And I just can't think of a more important topic in many ways to tackle for those
that
are in this
stage. I feel like really God wants to break the cycles. And if we can begin to talk about it and normalize it, and how do we do this together? God wants to set the church free.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
If this can be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you for your work.
Thank you for your willingness to be so brave and bring all of these hard things up and challenge us all.
Yeah. Well, you're an amazing therapist. You're an even greater friend. We love you very much. Thank you so much for taking the time. We'll keep doing this more. And thank you all for listening today.